It's Monday, May 29th, 2006, and you're listening to Episode 3 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is just under 45 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot, and before I introduce today's host, I want to make a side note about how much making a podcast is like running a role-playing game. You see, when I Game Master role-playing game, typically I come in, everybody's wound up from whatever and won't shut up so we can start. And what I found worse is you don't try to compete with that because you yell and they just yell over you.
Mm-hmm.
So you just sit there quietly, give them 5 or 10 minutes to work it out of their systems, let them do what they're going to do. Just stare at them, and eventually they'll feel guilty. They'll feel guilty, or they'll be afraid they're not going to get a game today, and they'll shut up, and then you can start. And
so I'm surprised you didn't flash the lights on and off myself.
I'm going to have to write role-playing game on the board and circle a letter. And if I circle them all, there's no role-playing game today.
Or you can just write Chad's name.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Anyway, getting back on topic, I'm Dan, and today we have actually an even fuller house than last time. But I'm okay with that because part of the way we advertised this show was as a roundtable discussion. So what's the point of a roundtable discussion if you don't have a fair number of voices? So once again, I'm Dan. Today I have with me Chad.
Hey.
Kevin is back from the first episode.
Ooh.
We have Adam.
Hi.
And John.
How you doing?
And new today, who's probably going to be a fixture on the show, he would have been with us the past two times, but he was on vacation, so we have back with us is Tim.
How's it going?
So he's a fixture, like light switch or...
An intrinsic, immovable fixture.
How's he back with us if he's never been here before?
That's true.
Well, because he was here actually when we were planning the show originally.
I came before you.
Yeah, actually,
was he really?
Yeah, he was. He was one of the first people I had involved in this.
Dan,
so
I
you
thought
left
I was
before
the first.
We even had a record deal.
Chad, you know I say that to all the hosts.
Yeah.
So today, what we're going to talk about once we get to the advice portion of the show is character creation. We're going to talk about creating concepts, creating personalities and backgrounds, finding inspiration, do's and don'ts, all sorts of good stuff. Before we get to that, though, and even before we get to the review portion of the show, we were having a conversation about our tastes and rules for role-playing games. And, of course, you're obviously...
A little bit of consternation came of that.
Right. And I'm one of those people, I like a full character sheet. I think the more descriptive, the more descriptive you can be of the character, the more stats, the more attributes you have represented, I think the better a simulation is. But John seems to take... almost a ridiculously dichotomous view of that.
Indeed, so, I do.
John,
and I just want to say, before he issues forth this wonderful idea, John, we came up with this idea together. Now you're taking complete credit for
Chad,
it.
Chad, I'll tell you exactly how this idea came to fruition and why you are indeed responsible for it.
Okay, but first let's introduce listeners. What is your concept for role-playing game rule system?
All right. My concept for role-playing game system, mine, is based on this ridiculous frustration that I had with Chad's constant revision of his house rules and his recreation of these extensive Byzantine character sheet systems that
we
I
rewrite
abhor.
The rules every game.
So is this a
not every game?
Oh, it's every single
not
game
every...
we rewrite the rules.
Hang on, is it every play session or is it just every game?
In any case,
they change at the play sessions.
Oh, yeah,
we don't stick to the original rules. They change throughout the game.
I wanted a rule system that was so simplistic that not even Chad could screw it up. So I decided there would be one number for the character. It would be your goodness number. You would be maybe a 5 or an 8 or perhaps a 12. Maybe we'll put it between 3 and 18 like good D&D.
So, wait. What did you call this game?
Well, since there was only one statistic, I settled on the perfect name for my system.
And?
Monostat.
It's a feminine hygiene product.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Copyright it.
It does get the job done.
So, all right, so this rule system is something like your SAT or ACT score.
Yeah.
It's one number that's relatively meaningless that follows you around the rest of your life.
It's not meaningless because you don't roll this number up. There's no way to decide it. You start out with one.
Exactly.
You're a level one character.
Okay, so if
you are one good.
You're one good. And what you do is that you roll the lowest dice you have, which I guess would be a two-sider, a coin. And it's like, if you have to do something, shoot somebody, jump over a fence, lift something up, use a skill, you'd roll on your stat. You'd flip the coin. And then when it's time to get a level, the game master decides to reward you, you go up one level.
your stat is 2.
And so now what, you roll a D3?
No, if you have a D3, sure, or you'd go to a D3 or D4. And then when you reach that level of dice, you'd go up to the next level of dice.
Chad is describing the already antiquated first edition model set. I have worked on the current edition, complete with 3 $40 hardcovers, which exactly how to deal with all the issues you may face while using monostat.
So hang on. So when is the
laid
forth? The 3.5 come out?
Get the Wizards of the Coast John, version right. going.
Let's say I made a character. Do I still, as in first edition, have just one goodness?
You do. You have a goodness number. However, it's not a level. You roll it, and that's what you have. You spring from the womb as a
That's a
9.
Totally separate game.
And if
that's
you want to
totally
make
separate game.
An attack roll versus the orc, you roll a 9.
Okay. Evolution.
You see what happens when two creators come around a game and can't agree?
So what kinds of things do I have to do to gain goodness?
Well, you can't in the hard and fast rules. However,
see, in
DM's discretion,
you could.
First edition was a wave of the past.
Well, at the end discretion, you could go up or down.
You can go up or down.
Chad, I somehow think he's taking you completely out of the picture here.
I know.
Let's say you come down with a really bad plague, and your monostat can't handle it.
You know what? I'm a classic monostat player.
So does this
I don't play the game from when the new company ruined it.
The monostat reduces your attack roll. It reduces your resistance to diseases.
I get the old monostat books on
you can't swim as well when you've got the problems that are lowering your monostat. And when your monostat can't mitigate the damage you have, you die.
You know what? I like the art in the first monostat books better.
Okay, now hang on. I want someone who actually knows what monostat is, that is a listener of our program, to post on our forums what is monostat, so we know just exactly how wrong we're getting.
It's a role-playing game.
We haven't gotten wrong yet, sir. We haven't gotten to the plot arc. The plot arc of the first monostat campaign.
It can only get more right.
Which is, of course, a plague of that the monostat must contain before it turns them all into irritated zombies.
See, mine is more of a free-form role-playing game. Yours is sounding like a board game.
Okay,
I'm going to give the players cards.
I'm going to have to give a behind-the-scenes technical note here for our listeners at home. If while you're listening to our broadcast, the sound suddenly stops, that's not a technical error. That's me silencing the sound wave because they said something I can't reproduce for our rating.
Like rot.
Yeah, so...
I'm sorry, infection of the...
I think that's going to get cut, too.
That was perfectly correct.
So, okay...
Okay, now before I have to turn this into a full 30 minutes of empty sound wave, for the product review today, we are actually going to review not a role-playing game, but review ourselves. And let me explain why we're doing that. I don't intend to spend very much time on the show talking about the show itself from episode to episode. But when you start up a podcast, the classical wisdom is that it takes you about 5 episodes to really perfect your creative voice, to get the exact balance of staying on topic versus being witty. You know, just making sure you come off the way you want to come off.
We're witty?
And no, we're not witty. We offend people.
Oh. We try to be witty.
I don't think we've offended anyone yet.
Well, except we're just trying.
Unless you've got a really bad case of the unspeakable.
So.
Roll for that. Go on, Dan.
Yeah, you're like a fallen tree on train tracks. You derail anything that comes by.
What can I say? I've got talent. I came up with monostat, for God's sake.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's do a quick review of our own show here. Just to think about where we've come over the past couple episodes and where we hope to go over this one.
I'd just like to say I'm perfectly innocent in this. This is my first broadcast.
You only come up with the concept. I mean, you're a fault for what's happening here. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I mean, you're the architect of Hitler's weapon. Trigger man or not. All right, so let's go down first. We had some feedback from a guy named James on our site. And by the way, we do look forward to getting feedback from all you guys. Certainly, we appreciate the positive, but even the negative helps us improve. So don't forget to stop by feartheboot.com. And you can leave a comment on our message board, or you can also use the contact link to send an email to one of the hosts if you want to say something just to one of us. But on our message board, we had a post by a guy named James. I want to read a little bit of what he had to say here, and we'll stop and discuss, kind of kick around what he said. To start off by saying, I agree with some points, but disagree a lot also. I can't say I've ever wanted to shoot myself in the head having to listen to RP stories.
Clearly has never heard one before.
Now, there's some good, like, reminiscent of RP stories.
Well, okay.
Only for people who share the story with you.
Maybe. Yeah, well, from the same game.
Yeah, like me and Adam are talking about an RP story of something we've had in the past, and John, it was before he got into the group. Adam and I are going back and forth. We're reliving it. We're almost acting it
out. John's reloading.
I want to die. I've already emptied six into my skull, and I'm not dead yet, and I'm sad.
Well, then I guess you need to stop using a revolver and start using something with more ammo.
I guess. Not even John's
much higher rate of fire.
Poopy RP story.
Says, if that was the case, I highly doubt Wizards of the Coast would have such a large market. There are, this one actually kind of took me aback, and I'll tell you why here in a second. Mm. There are bigger nerds than you guys out there that enjoy RP 10 times more. Now, I want to respond to two parts of that.
Hang on, I'm a really big nerd.
I have to throw down the challenge.
What's funny is I have spent my whole life loathing the nerd moniker, and yet the first time somebody told me you're not a nerd, I felt offended.
Well, Dan, that's because nowadays there's girls with the I Heart Nerd
shirts. Hold on just a second. There's a story there. Who told you you weren't a nerd?
This guy right here. There are guys out
there. Oh, he's bigger nerd than you.
Yeah, okay. James here said there are guys out there that are far bigger nerds than you guys are.
Yeah.
Well, he's not saying you're not a nerd. Well, he's just questioning my credentials.
your street cred is a nerd. Oh, my God.
I'm just like your pocket protector. I'm going away.
I've gone from being a doctorate nerd to a mail order bachelor of the arts. So
I just like to say, I've been carrying my D20 and my dice bag with me for 2 months now wherever I go.
Okay, the second thing I wanted to respond to before I back up to his original point about RP stories is he said there are guys out there that enjoy RP probably 10 times more. And that point I would disagree with. We are actually huge fans of the RP aspect of games.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that a lot. We really believe in getting deep with the characters. We don't go quite as far as LARPing or trying to...
Yeah. I think that's the point he's making, though, is that LARPers tend to take RP much more serious than we do.
Well, I think I took it to more mean that he may be confusing something we said, that we said we're not interested in hearing third-party RP stories, and therefore we're not interested in the RP. And that's not true. We just don't like hearing, I don't want to sit at a party for 20 minutes with some guy sitting there telling me about his dungeon crawl. You know,
Or is he talking about, like, you know, we were talking about how we don't like this kind of play style or pretty much this kind of play style, like power gaming. We were really ripping on power gaming. And it's like, and I think he's making the point that there are people out there who really enjoy power gaming. And you know what? I have always said, are you playing? Are you having fun?
Yeah,
yes.
That's what it's
is
about.
Is the purpose of a role-playing game to have fun? Yes. Then you're good to go.
Right.
And run with that.
Something we want to really emphasize is that we have a lot of opinions. That's why we're making this podcast. But we are not so foolish as to think that our opinions are laws. If you guys completely disagree with us, you have fun playing these games in 100 different ways that we just we're completely against, that's fine. You know,
in fact, tell us about it.
Yeah, tell
us how we're
it.
Wrong, because I would love to hear the counterpoints on air, so to speak. I'd love to answer some of that.
Right. We like the marketplace of ideas. So, Mr. James, if you enjoy hearing role-playing stories, then...
Yeah, more power to you.
And I don't entirely disagree with you. I think they tend to drag on and be painful, but...
You know, I think three casts down the line, there's going to be a Monostead gaming story.
I have no doubt of that.
I'd love to hear a Monostead gaming story. Because right, we've never actually played.
I rolled a 6, and you know what that means.
What level were you?
To the gynecologist.
What was that about derailing? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think... Okay, so our next set of feedback I'm going to read. James said some other things, so you can check that out on our site. But that was the big thing I wanted to respond to. Our next set of feedback came from Dawn.
Yeah, my wife.
And Dawn had both some positive and negatives to give us.
And she ran out of character limit on the space. So,
yeah, I did not realize.
Unfortunately, all the negatives were Chad. Well,
I'm
my
used to that.
On the show. Now, that aside, here's what you need to do.
You gave him a mic. Why?
Which, that does bring something up, though, a little technical side note here, that apparently there is a truncation limit, where if you type too much in the form, it cuts you off. And I don't know what that is, but I guess what you can do is take Dawn's post, copy and paste it in MS Word, and do a word count on it, and...
Yeah. Well, here, that kind of brings up the question, would it be possible for us to ever have forums? You know, nothing huge, but...
Well, I mean, at the moment, I think simply having a sort of... journal type thing where they can respond to our posts is good enough.
It's not like we have very many listeners.
No, right I mean, now, so. If at some point in the future, you know, we get that big, then sure. But that's definitely not where we're at now. So dream big. But all right. So getting back to Dawn, let's start with the positive here. Dawn started off by saying all three of you, and by the way, this was a reference to episode one. So all these comments from Dawn are about episode one.
So that's me.
This would be me, Chad, and Kevin.
Yeah.
And she said all three of you have good radio voices, so I really enjoyed hearing what you have to say. So we'll start off. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I hear him a bit nasally.
Well, that's because last time I had the bottom dropped out of your voice. That was my fault. It says the podcast itself was interesting and funny. And I expect they will get better as you get more used to the format. And Dawn, that is definitely true. This is a learning process, and we're doing the most learning up front. So
I think that our second broadcast was a lot better than our first.
Yeah, episode two was definitely very... It was a lot better than episode one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was here.
That's true.
And I was here.
That's true. Monostat aside, I think episode three is going to shape up even better than
Monostat
episode two.
Monostat aside, that's the gold that's going to make this episode.
right. Okay. The negative she said, and once again, this is in response to episode one. She said the show was a little bit disorganized, which it was. And that was the biggest thing we addressed for episode two. And Dawn even went back and posted after episode two that she thought the organization was a lot better. Mm-hmm. We did too, because we came in a lot better.
Well, there's a little story behind episode one too, where it was like we had recorded recorded one episode and we hated it. It was boring. It was like a lecture circuit.
Well, what we actually posted as episode one was meant as a practice.
Was a practice, yeah. And it was like, it was so, the two practice ones that, or the two real ones that we did were so boring and so scripted and so dry and flat. We needed to loosen up. So yeah. I was like, okay, let's just do practice. Let's just talk. Let's just loosen up and talk and do a practice. And Dan hit record and we just went into it. And we were really relaxed, but there was no framework.
Right.
At all.
We needed that because we had to get comfortable behind the mics. We had to. And we're still feeling out our voice for this. So
yeah, those first two, though, they could put a cocaine addict on caffeine to sleep. So. Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, we got rid of them.
Skipping down a few lines, Dawn says, I've had to sit through my share of RP replay monologues after all.
No.
And if the speaker is interesting to begin with, it isn't so bad.
She lies.
Keep in mind the place I work at, by the way, she works at a bookstore, has an entire bay devoted to RP novels, and they sell quite well. I think there's a little difference between the RP novels and the RP stories, even if the novels were, Adam shaking his head.
Well, it's almost like a novel is written.
Yeah, well, it's almost like an inside joke. It's the magazine is the RP novel, and the inside joke that only a small group of friends know would be the RP story. Yeah. No one outside that is going to get the inside joke.
Well, and Dawn brought up the point, too, online, is that a lot of those RP novels, because she's a writer and she researches this and that sort of thing, she says a lot of those RP novels are the author's gaming groups, and those are the games that they play and run, and then they novelize them and sell them.
Right. And
so you're basically listening to reading an RP story.
Yeah, but the novelization process agree with that.
Right. The novelization process improves.
There's a big difference in that.
Yeah. And then also I can look at all these RP novels and go, I am interested in this subject matter with these characters and this one, and then I'm going to choose and read that story. Whereas when you're trapped in a party and some guy's, my wizard, he got this staff, and it was the staff of lore, and I am playing a gnome, and I am a demon gnome. And I am a vampire.
She hit on something, though, that I definitely agree with. She started off by saying, and maybe this figures into the RP novels, she starts off by saying that, you know, if the speaker is interesting to begin with, it isn't so bad. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly the person telling the story, their skill as a storyteller, their wit, their charm, is going to figure heavily into how good it is listened to. Yeah. And if you're a good writer, you can make a good book out of a RP session sitting around with your friends. And as we said before, to each their own. If you enjoy telling these stories, you enjoy listening to these stories, that's great. We think no worse of you. We're just shooting off our mouths on air because that's what this show is for.
Yeah.
So, but please,
they pay
God
us
bless
the, big
the internet.
Bucks for,
but please, I mean, write
my constitutional right.
If you disagree with us, write in, and we will happily kick around any points you bring up on the air. And with James and Dawn, we appreciate their comments.
Yeah.
And
thanks a lot, guys.
And we agree with a lot of things you guys had to say.
Please keep comments coming. We love it.
Yeah. I think another distinction real quick, though, is RP stories are actually interesting. It's the stories that drive everyone nuts, wanting to have us drill holes through our head.
I'm a gnome, and I'm a demon,
yeah,
and I'm a vampire.
Yeah, they're more stat-based ones.
Yeah, it's,
where you know,
it's the I survived with combat.
One hit point left. We're just like, yay.
My defense was so high, they couldn't even hit me. Okay, good job.
Great. Good game.
Okay. Whereas if you tell the Harpy story, like, okay, there was this lair, and you're walking through, and the icicles are dripping blood, and you see this dragon breath echoing through the cavern, there's a little bit of a difference there between, am I rolled my D20?
Why are the icicles dripping with blood?
I was looking at you, and I just thought of it.
Well, thanks.
In my game, it would be because of a severely failed roll.
Sun charm.
Ooh, you failed your good check.
Okay. For the advice portion of today's show, we're going to talk about the art and science character creation. And as with our advice on group templates in the last episode, we think that if you're an experienced player, there's going to be some good tidbits in here for you. And if you're a new player, probably it's good to walk through this material in whole. When we talked about character creation before we did this show, we came up with three general steps to making a good character and some sub-steps in between those. And we'll walk through those in turn. Step one is picking a concept. And by a concept, it's just the one-sentence description of what you're going to be. I'm going to be a human warrior from this kingdom. I'm going to be since we're doing Shadowrun, you might have a street mage who was raised in this industrial city or this industrial neighborhood we talked about. This is typically a really easy part.
Yeah, this is the concept that, you know, as soon as one of your buddies says, hey, we're playing Shadowrun, this is the concept that pops right into your head immediately.
Right. And nobody has problems with this step, not that I've talked to at least. So we're only going to say a couple quick things about it and then move on to point number two, where we think there's a lot more meat to discuss. So when you're picking a concept, first of all, be sure your concept fits into the group template. We talked about last time making a group template. If your group's going to be a bunch of vigilantes trying to clean up their neighborhood, don't try to create a pacifist pencil pusher who lives in a high rise. Secondly, and this is pretty close to the first point,
or make a pacifist pencil pusher that would be there. That actually would be kind of interesting.
Was there a movie about that one?
Well, you know, if you can work
Falling Down.
Yeah, that's it.
If you can work that out, great. But that's just something you got to think through. Be sure to think about the group template. Secondly, be sure your concept fits into the sort of game the game master will be running. Don't make an office worker for a dungeon crawl.
Yeah, Chad actually came up with an old story that we remembered.
Yeah.
It was going to be a big D&D game. Painful. It was going to be a great D&D game. It was huge adventuring. Everyone was just fitting together really well. And then one dude wanted to make this overweight, gout-having intestinal dude that just never left his inn. He was an innkeeper that never left.
He was like a 300-pound... innkeeper, and he had this innkeeper and this daughter, and it was a great character because he came up with this whole story and family, and it was really neat. And everybody else had come up with pretty good characters, but their characters were adventurers and stuff. And it would have been interesting if this guy was like the out of place guy, and he was on this adventure and he didn't want to come, and it would have made interesting role playing things. But that's not how it worked out. It was more like everybody was ready to go off and kill the proverbial dragon, and they were like, okay, let's go, dude. And he's like,
No,
I have to stay with my inn. Well, that's a cool character and all, but the adventure isn't in the inn. It's not in the inn.
Right, and when he did that, ultimately, he gave the game master two options, which is run two separate games or exclude him completely.
Yeah.
And so that's not fun. Mm-hmm. That's not diversity. That just is game ruining, so don't do it.
You know, I could see people saying, well, that kind of conflict would be really interesting in a game, role-playing that conflict out.
Yeah,
for one game, and then when the end of the night it's decided that he can't come along, or he isn't going to go along, the game's over. He has to make a new character.
Exactly. The third note we have here within picking your concept is picking something that helps group balance. And I'm going to explain the point, and we have a disagreement here within the group on this.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to that here in just a second. Now, what we mean by group balance, here we are talking about class balance.
Right.
If you've got a bunch of fighters, have someone in there that has some kind of a support ability to heal them, help them over obstacles, whatever. Now, my view on this is it's a shade of gray, but I lean towards doing it. I think it's a mistake to do the stereotypical fighter, cleric, mage, rogue just because you have to, and I think it creates an artificial and campy party. But I do think being a pen and paper simulator where somewhere you've got to let the rubber hit the road with the rules, when you're in a fight, you need somebody to heal you. So while I don't think you should engineer the perfectly balanced min-max party, I do think you should try for some amount of diversity just to help you make it through the challenges you're going to face in the game. But Chad disagrees with me on this.
Yeah, I totally disagree with you. I think that part of the challenge of a good game is that the people aren't perfectly suited, equipped, and ready for the situations that they face. You know, it's like you have groups of people who it's realistic that they're not ready for certain things. They don't always have the healer. They don't always have the fighter. I think a lot of that is dependent on what kind of game you play. If you play like real combat-oriented games, you're going to want more of a balanced character class thing. If you play more story-oriented games, you know, you're not necessarily even going to go with the standard character classes. And you're not going to have everybody who fills certain out-of-character roles.
Well, no, but I think the good point to bring up there is that diversity is always a good thing. Now, be it if that's in your personalities, or be it, you know, if you're just starting out in gaming and you really are thinking about classes, and I know we have some definite, you know, people who don't exactly care to think in terms of classes, but if you're just starting out, having a little bit of diversity is not a bad thing either.
Well, my problem with it, I agree with you. Having diversity is a good thing, but I don't think it's necessarily the realistic thing. You know, it's a matter of you're not, when you think of the storyline, you're not always going to have the right people coming together at the right time for the right situation.
And just to back up something Chad's saying, even though he and I generally disagree on this point, we're not going to talk about it in this podcast, but in a future podcast, when we get to game mastering tactics, that's something the game master can and should be able to address. That if you have a party, let's say in D&D, and you've just got three fighters, you have no mage, you have no cleric, the game master should work to accommodate that, which you can do. You can tone down the combats a little bit. You can make the loot just plentifully filled with healing potions. There are things that you can do to help the party play what they want to play while still making it through the game.
And that's another point, too, is that, you know, you might have a group of people and one guy wants to play the rogue, one guy wants to play the mage, one guy wants to play the warrior. No one wants to play the healer, we'll say, because that's the most obvious one. And it's like, well, what do? You force the last guy out to play a healer, even though he doesn't necessarily want to play it because the group needs a healer? It depends on the type of game again.
Well, no, but also you ultimately, you know, and you know, all points aside, you ultimately have fun. If you're all going to have fun playing the same thing, great. Just like you said earlier in the show. If you're all going to have fun being diverse, great, be diverse.
Yeah, if everybody wants to play the balanced classes, again, more power to them.
So when picking your concept, just to review real quick, be sure you fit in the group template. Be sure you fit into the sort of the game that the GM is going to run. And if your group is interested in these things, then make sure you have a balanced party. If not, don't worry about it. Let the game master handle that, and we'll talk about that more in a later episode. Now, major step two. Creating your personality and background. This is a step that I think most gaming groups don't give enough attention to, and some don't give really any attention to it at all. But there are very few gaming groups I've sat in with that I see giving this what I think is sufficient attention. And the reason I think it's so important is because a role-playing game by its name is a role-playing game. You are trying to be someone else in a fictional universe, in a fictional situation, acting out how you think they would handle those situations. And if you have no background, you have no context for your actions. There's no driving force behind them. I am in real life who I am today because of yesterday and the day before and the day before. You know, I don't like certain things and do like certain things because of the experiences I've had. And personality gives me a sense of how I'm going to behave now. It makes me different from the other people. It makes me memorable. And just as I'm sure everyone here has read books or seen movies that were ruined by shallow, boring, cliche characters, this exact same thing can happen in a role-playing game. That if you walk in with insufficient character personality, it's going to flatten the game in many ways.
Well, to me, this is the most fun step because it gives personality to the numbers. I mean, a bunch of numbers and stats on my sheet doesn't mean squat to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
I think, sadly, that this problem is institutionalized into the hobby that we have. I mean, again, I allude to the Player's Handbook for Dungeons & Dragons, the single biggest book. Character personality has all of 2.5 pages, I think, sandwiched in between 200
stats. If even a page, you know, it's
not
a couple
that
lines.
It's Wizards of the Coast responsibility to provide me with character depth but it's easy, I would think, for a new hobbyist to pick it up and say, well, character background is something I should spend 30 seconds on. The real important part of the game is all these stats, and right, that's not so.
And one thing we found that helps with that is make that your second step after you've put together your group template. Take that group template, see what sort of characters that allows for, and immediately go into your personality and background. Don't roll dice. Don't look at equipment lists. Mm-hmm. First, think about who this is going to be, and go back and roll up the numbers to reflect that.
Well, when you say roll up the numbers to reflect that, what if I say that I'm, you know, somebody, I'm really weak, and I'm scrawny, and I put up all this different character stuff, but when I roll the stats, my stats don't necessarily reflect that.
Well, some of this is, of course, gaming styles and gaming choices. I've even talked to people that like to do it the reverse way, that they would like to roll up a stat sheet and then almost like reading tea leaves, say, what does this look like? You know,
right,
here's a guy who, for some strange reason, has a really limited intellect, and he also has a really limited strength, and you know, what kind of person is that? What led up to this? But to answer your question specifically, if you are following our method where you want to begin with a personality and then write up a character sheet that's going to reflect that, I think there's two ways you can go after that, one of which is adjust the character sheet. Get the game master to let you do a little bit of point trading or horse trading. You know, if you want to be weak but really strong, then see if it'll let you take some points out of strength to put in intellect. The second thing is there's also no harm in going back and revisiting the character sheet, or the personality, rather. Mm-hmm. That if you roll this guy up and you just can't make that work, then go back and change your background a little bit.
Right.
As long as it's interesting. It doesn't have to be anything else in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're talking about personality and background, obviously the first place you've got to go to find inspiration is the group template. If you look at the group template, and the group template says that you all lived in this one town and all had this event in common, you obviously want to use that as the beginning for your personality and background. This is in there somewhere. But where else do you guys draw inspiration from when you're trying to come up with a good, compelling, original character?
You know, personally, I've seen two different ways doing it. I've seen, you know, a gaming group get together and go, okay, let's all go write up our characters, and they all split to the four winds. I prefer everyone staying together for at least a little while and bounce ideas off of each other. That's where I get a lot of my inspiration from, just the fact that I get feedback. You know, Tim, that's a really stupid idea. Oh, okay. Or, you know, that's not half bad, but what if you thought about this? So I like discussion. Yeah.
Okay, I agree with you, Tim. I need a lot of feedback when I make my character.
All right, so other players. But if you're trying to start the very idea, original inspiration, you know, what you've come up with the concept. I want to be...
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I go to bizarre historical characters myself. One of my most long-standing characters is actually derived from a Nazi foreign minister, Joachim von Ribbentrop. I changed the first name around and altered a few letters. But I was just reading in my German history class, and this guy was a champagne salesman who somehow initiated his way up through Hitler's circles and became this cabinet man, and I was like, wow, that's a bizarre set of personality traits, so I'll just kind of make a character sort of about that.
Historical characters, that's good. Something else that I find myself doing, and talking to one of our other friends who's not involved in the podcast, he does as well, is take yourself and distort it. And what I mean by that is you can say, you know, what would I be like if I had grown up in a different place, had gone through an unusually easy childhood, had everything handed to me on a silver platter? What kind of person would I have become? And at first, that sounds kind of shallow and like an easy way out, and it can be if you don't do it right. But if you really twist and distort yourself well, you can make a compelling character, and it's easier to play. Because, let's admit it, we all see the world through the fishbowl of our own eyes. That if I was going to try and roleplay Chad, for example, I would still play him as I see him. I would not play Chad for who he really is. And the same thing's true of a fictional character. So I find that I can even draw inspiration from within. John, you suggested historical characters. I think you can also look at events. If you begin with the events of the life, you have a group template, you know some of the things that happened to the person, what kind of person would that turn out?
Yeah.
You can also get it from movies. You can get it from books.
Right.
You can get it from comics. You can get it from anything, really. It's all going to come, you know, what influences your life? What do you think's cool? What do you want to do? What have you always you know, imagined yourself dreaming at night being able to do and never been able to do it. I mean, that's inspiration right there.
And as you're looking for inspiration, one big rule we want to throw out here is avoid cliches.
Mm-hmm.
That if you play the barbarian who's big and dumb and says me instead of I, you know, me smash, and all he wants to do is fight, you may have a lot of fun with that. And if you do, I mean, knock yourself out. But if you're trying to run a deeper game, don't play a cliche. Don't play the weak little book nerd. Don't play the big drooling strongman. Because
try and do something different.
You're gonna
mix it up a little.
You're going to create characters that don't challenge you, that aren't compelling, that don't have any room to grow because they were not much to begin with. You get out what you put in.
Yeah.
And that's very true. But the one thing that I like to always keep in mind is always make sure it's within your scope of playing. You know, if you're
True. If you're a Shakespeare quoting guy, if your character's a Shakespeare quoting guy, and you just aren't at that level,
exactly.
You know, you're going to have trouble even playing that.
Yeah, and it's something, you know, make sure you're having fun and make sure it's within your scope to play. Make sure it's something you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Don't play a mathematician if you're bad at math.
Darn right.
And also, don't make something that's going to unnecessarily annoy the group. And yet again, Shade of Grey. We're not saying that you've got to make people at all get along wonderfully and hold hands and skip through the adventures.
Well,
but don't make something where the character is so abrasive, so annoying to your fellow players, that it's going to create...
An example of that would be, not to get too deep into the story, D&D game, I was playing a kinder steal from everybody in the party, that's their thing. Well, guess what? That kind of pisses everybody in the party off.
Not in a good way.
Not in a good way, yeah. I mean, it's like at first it's kind of like, stop that. But then it has to be ongoing with the character, and it gets tiresome.
Well, there's a difference between interesting personality conflicts, you know, that are good to play on, rather than I really don't want to play with this person anymore. His character is so freaking annoying.
And you got to remember that these characters ultimately are being created by people and being played with other people. It's a purely social dynamic, because the things that I could make in a character that may really annoy the people and sitting here making this podcast, your group may think is wonderful and get a big kick out of, and that's fine. You've got to just be sure to remember the people that are involved. The third final step that we have, the major step we have here, so we have pick a concept, create a personality and background. The third thing we have here is to create meaningful weakness and room to grow within your character. Let me explain what we mean by that and why this, what sounds like such a counterintuitive idea, can actually do a lot for your characters. When you're sitting down rolling up your character, everybody wants to make a character who's successful in some way. Even if big strength and hit points isn't your thing, you're going to want to have a lot of skills, a lot of context. Very few people like to play characters that have any kind of a weakness. But the problem is, you don't give yourself any room to grow that way. If your character has nothing wrong with him, there's nothing about him that sets him apart from the rest of the world. There's nothing about him that gives him an interesting relationship to situations he's in, that makes him rely on the people around him, that makes him struggle, that makes him look in the mirror and really question who he or she is and why they're doing this.
Well, and this will also give you a really good kind of almost excuse, really, to live with the numbers you roll. Or, hey, you're, as in Shadowrun, you know, when you're making your character, you have priorities. Well, you know, you're a wealthy guy. You're not going to have as many attributes as the next guy who chose that first. Okay, that's fine. Build some weaknesses into your character. It's okay.
And that's something that if a player is brave enough to do, note to the game masters, be sure to accommodate that. That if someone is actually going to challenge themselves by trying to play a character who isn't very eloquent in his speech or has a deep fear of something that's very common in the world or whatever, you'll be sure to accommodate them. Don't throw them into situations they just cannot possibly get past, or where you're going to penalize them for choosing to play something deeper.
Challenge them, don't penalize them.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. At the same time, I think it's important for the players to pick weaknesses that they can relate to and that they can understand. You know, if you have no idea what it would be like to be a paraplegic, then don't play one, because you wouldn't play it right.
Right. Well, I think that gets into, not to go too off topic here, but like gender. I know there's a lot of role players out there who love playing the opposite gender, and I have yet to see it played well. It has always come off campy, cheesy, and incorrect.
It's hard. Picking a believable weakness can be tough. One thing I might recommend for a beginner, and even after that stage, what I do with a lot of my characters is someone who is not exactly perfectly brave. I think it's really easy to get into the mind of someone who'd be afraid of a Mortal Kombat situation, because I think most of us are. And when remarking upon the cast of characters that we see all through the games, I don't really notice the shimmer of fear in any of them ever at any context. And so I started to introduce that into my own roleplay, and I found it very satisfying. It made a much more believable character.
Actually. And when your character believably overcame some of those fears and stood up in a moment of bravery, it was really cool and very dramatic.
And you know, courage is a great example of a weakness that's very believable to the reality of the characters within, but we get detached from. Because, for example, if you were a real knight in a real field and this dragon rises up, you don't know you're level 15. All you know is this dragon's the size of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no bravery in charging it because you know your stats, you know his stats, and nobody plays the courage. Someone here got an example of a character they made that had a really good built-in weakness.
I created a character one time who as far as, even beyond physical weaknesses, who was mute. He also had a very hard time dealing with authority. And I don't mean authority in the, you know, he didn't want to be told what to do. I'm talking about institutional, governmental, almost emotional authority over him.
Let's talk about the being mute part, because the authority part, it's hard to say, well, that's a trait or a weakness.
Fair enough.
But let's talk about the mute part, because that's definitely a weakness. Now, most people wouldn't go so far as giving themselves a physical disability, and I typically wouldn't recommend it. But in your case, how did being mute actually add to the game, not just take away from it?
Well, it's interesting, because honestly, I didn't. The only time I could speak was out of character, and we didn't really have a lot of out of character
moments. Yeah, there was a lot of that particular game had a lot of dialogue going on. And it was really interesting because any time you wish to express yourself, you had to do it through some physical thing, either moving your arms around, making faces, or saying, I am going to do this, I am going to do that, I am going to do this. And it was really interesting how you had to get really creative on how you expressed, how your character expressed himself.
And it was really fun. And I'll be honest, the one time, and he talked twice in the entire game, because you can physically actually whisper without vocal cords. But he only talked twice. Once was a moment of intimidation against a foe, but that's beside the point. The second time that I wanted to hit on was when he died. My character died, and it was a very emotional moment.
And the something that I think this shows is that most people, when they hear the idea of giving their characters a weakness, they instantly recoil. Nobody wants to play a character who's got whatever kind of problem, who's low in skills, who's got poor hit points, whatever the case may be. And those are kind of meaningless stat weaknesses. I'm talking more personality weaknesses. But we have, to this day, one of our most entertaining, memorable experiences because someone was willing to be brave enough to create a character that had some kind of a meaningful weakness. And it's also, it's very realistic because there is no human being out there that doesn't have some list of serious faults and problems and flaws. Mm-hmm. And you're going to find it adds a lot of depth and a lot of color to your game to put those in there, just as the flaws of the people around you is, quite frankly, whether it's always wanted or not, it's what makes them interesting.
Yeah, and as long as it's realistic, too. You know, it's like you never want to create a character, create the history, create the background, say, you know, this character's too perfect. I'm going to put him in a wheelchair. You know, it's like, where did that even come from?
Yeah, make it meaningful.
Yeah, make it meaningful, make it interesting.
So,
and also don't use it to buy up things, too. Don't put something into your character that is a weakness just to look at the game master and say, okay, I'm in a wheelchair, but I want the power to control people's minds.
Right. So, just to review real quick, in character creation, the three steps we gave are to pick a concept, to create a personality and background, and create meaningful weaknesses. And what we're going to do to support this episode is we're going to put just background and personality write-ups for our four Shadowrun characters online. We're not going to put up stat sheets because, quite frankly, I'm sure if you really are interested in Shadowrun, you know how to make a Shadowrun character. So we're just going to show you the personalities and backgrounds we created for this game. And next time, we're going to head hop from the players to the game masters, and we are going to start talking about, now with these character sheets in hand, the steps the game master is going to take to create and execute his game from the ground up. So we hope to catch you next time, and we'll see you then.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.